And this is the Age Group Multisport Podcast with me, Richard Conway. This is a platform for age group multisport athletes to showcase their journeys.
I came up with the name 220 one day coming back from a BTA meeting, and it was about four of us in the car, you know, brainstorming names.
Sure.
And as you know, 220 is the sort of theoretical maximum beat of a heart, human heartbeat. And you take your age off 220 to get your maximum.
Ah, right. Okay.
Yeah. And that's where the name came from.
Ah, clever.
So, and everybody used to say, why have we called it 220? Is it, you know, is it how long it takes you to do a race, or is it the circumference of a wheel or whatever? But that's the reason. So it's because it was, you know, we're dealing with a sort of maximum heartbeat type sport, then that's where it came from.
And that was the voice of our guest today, Duncan Robb. And a little bit different to start the year off. And Happy New Year, by the way, to everybody listening. I hope you've had a good couple of weeks in the 2025 already, and your training's going to plan. But a little bit different this episode, as Duncan reached out and asked, were we looking for guests? And of course I said yes, always looking for guests. He said that he wasn't an age grouper yet, but it's something that he'd be looking to do. But his background story was so good, I just couldn't resist getting him on and getting an insight into the history of not only triathlon, but British triathlon and the 220 magazine. And basically, he started the 220 magazine all those years ago. So we've got a really, really interesting conversation of the history of our sport. I hope you enjoy it. I really enjoyed speaking to Duncan. Very, very knowledgeable. And so that's the main event that's coming up. British Triathlon have announced that there will be a new range of kit coming out this year for us to purchase. And so that'll be new tri suit and all the gear. I've noticed that they have put a sale on over Christmas to try and get rid of all the old gear. I myself got a couple of vests, age group vests, and they were £2 each, believe it or not. I did a little video about that under new kit on YouTube. So they've announced that we'll be getting a new tri suit and new kit and a new supplier. So watch this space. Hopefully it'll be a really nice day. On a personal front, training's gone really well, and went to see a physio last week and to get to the bottom of all the lower limb issues that I've been having over the last 15 months, and she was really good. I've done a video about that on YouTube of how I hate massage, so check that one out. The massage was really good, and I'm going to continue with it now that I've found somebody who I can get along with. And I'll be going again next month, and I'll try and keep it regular. So that was a turning point for myself. And got back in the pool as well, and started the Zwift Build Me Up cycling plan. I'm in week three of that, and that is tough, man. If you've not seen it, and you've got Zwift, head over there and have a look at that. It's definitely tough, so I'm on with that, and the running's going okay, and touch wood, not had any issues, problems. In fact, we did the Cleethorpes New Year's Day 10k, and I enjoyed that. I didn't look at my watch once, just ran round, took it steady, and come out with a good not performance because I wasn't trying to perform, but a good steady run. Started off easy and then just built up as I went round. So I was quite happy with that. Nice, nice first race of the year. Good way to start your year. I've not got any reviews for podcasts because I've not really been listening to any over the holiday period. So I shall get back to that when probably when I start working again. So I think that's about it, short and sweet, on this episode. We shall get to the main event, listen to Duncan's fantastic story, and we shall see you on the other side.
All right, well, so my name's Duncan Robb. I live in near Ashbourne in Derbyshire, so kind of in the middle of the country now. I am a born and bred Northumbrian. I grew up in Northumberland. Got into triathlon 40 years ago. I was going to buy a mountain bike, and I bought a cycling magazine. And in it was a feature about triathlon bikes, featuring a young man by the name of Peter Moisey, who was the tester. And I thought, this sounded interesting, because at the time I used to go swimming every lunchtime. And I thought, oh, right, swimming. And I ran a bit, so I thought, this sounds like a good thing to do. So before that, I mean, that was it. How old would I have been then? Somewhere in mid to late 20s. Okay. And before that, I was pretty much useless at sport. You know, at school when they're picking teams and the last one to get picked, that was me.
Yeah.
So I was never a sporty person at school.
It's incredible, you know, the amount of people that have been on and have hit quite a high standard. Obviously, everybody hits a high standard to get to age group.
Yeah.
I've never done any sport as a kid because they all have that background, you know.
Yeah.
It just goes to show when you haven't found the sport or, you know, the three sports in our case, the potential is amazing, isn't it? It's there.
And it's interesting, some of the guys who were the sort of superstars at school, they feel like they've peaked then and they just go on and put on fat and get old. There's very few of them that go on to carry on their sporting achievements when they get older. Yeah. But I mean, the real superstars are the ones like the Brownlee brothers who were superstars when they were kids, and they've just carried on being superstars.
Yeah. And I think in their case, sounding like, they'll probably carry on and carry on and carry on because it's ingrained, isn't it?
It's just in the blood.
Which not many elite athletes do.
There's a limit how far you can go. But yeah, I got into, so that would have been 1985, I think it was. Next year's 40 years. And I did a few events, local events. I think the first one I did was in Durham.
Right.
And I've still got the T-shirt for it. It's my prized possession. And it hasn't faded away yet. And I did a few more that year. And I sort of thought, I'd like to organise one of these. So I started back in 85. Planning of an event in 86, and that was in Hexham on the swimming in the River Tyne,
right?
And that became what became the Grand Prix series at the time. There wasn't sort of thing like that. I don't know if you remember that far back.
No, I mean, I didn't really get involved in multisport till 2010.
Right.
It just wasn't a thing for me.
Well, back then it was really amateurish and very kind of haphazard almost.
Yeah.
And the few guys that were running it came from different backgrounds. And I can't remember what came first now. I organised the race, and obviously I'd went to other events to see how they were done and chatted to some of the other race directors about how they organised the events and chatted to some of the guys who were competing to find out what made a good race, what made it memorable, what to avoid, stuff like that. So we put the race on, and it was a great success. Everybody voted it's one of the best races of the year. So when the British Triathlon Association had its meeting at Cannock later that year, some wisecracker said, because the guy who was running it at the time, a guy called Roger King, he'd had enough of it. He'd come from a long distance swimming background. And they sort of pointed their finger at me and said, he can do it. So I thought, oh, thanks very much. So I went down there one day, down near to Walsall, drove down, picked up the computer. And the computer was the British Triathlon Association, right, with about 3,000 names on it, I think. of people who'd been competing over the couple of years. Because I think the first event was 84.
Okay.
So they had 2 years before I found out about it. And I came home and set the computer up and started doing newsletters. And the newsletters, of course, led to 220 being formed a couple of years later. But in that time when I was doing the newsletters, I was obviously getting to know the people, getting to know all the other race organizers, and also competing myself and organizing other events myself as well. So I
Yeah.
was kind of very involved
Yeah. So what did you
at the
do as a
time.
career then, Duncan, at the
Was I
time?
do what?
What did you do as a career at the time to enable you to do
Well,
what?
we had a shop, and I worked in our local shop,
Right.
department store.
Okay.
And that got sold in 87. So I thought, great, I can get on with triathlon now. Work isn't going to get in the way.
Yeah.
And obviously, as the administrator of the association, I was getting paid a small salary, if you like, to do that. So I was doing that, and then organizing events. I was organizing events in Milton Keynes and all over the place, really. And I was taking part in events. So I was getting, like I say, very involved in what was going on,
Yeah.
getting to know the guys who were doing well. And it's interesting, when I did that first event, I remember well, there was a guy in his 60s, a guy called Robert Robinson. He was the only guy in his 60s. And one guy who became a bit of a legend called Patrick Barnes, who was in his 70s. And he used to turn up at all the events with his little sit-up and beg bicycle with a wicker basket on the front. He was always last to finish, but everybody used to wait and cheer him in because he was a very popular guy. But poor Robert Robinson, you'd think at 60 he'd know better. He said, "I only do this for the medal for the grandchildren." But he died a few months later in a hang gliding accident.
Oh.
That's the sort of guy he was. He was just, full of adventure and everything. But of course now, the age groups, there wasn't such a thing as age group triathletes in those days. You all just competed. There was an over 40 section, and sometimes there's an over 50 section. But I mean, nobody was with an over 60 section because it just didn't happen. But now, of course, it's all 5 year age groups, and it's highly competitive. So I'm in the 65 to 69 age group now, and finding guys there who've just sort of got into it the last few years who are doing really, really well. And those are the guys that I'm kind of chasing and wishing I could go as quick as they did. And I can still hold my own in the swim, but the cycling, I think, is where if you're a good cyclist, you can make up so much time. And I think it's just getting out on the road and putting the miles in. There's no substitute for it.
And what distance do you favor at the moment?
I've just been doing a lot of local, I think they're known as little fish and chip events. Just the sort of mini sprints, if you like, pool-based swims. But I want to do another open water swim. That's why I want to do Dubrovnik next year,
Right, and
which
what
is
distance is that?
that's Olympic distance race.
Right.
So that's 26th of October next year, and that's organized by John Lund, who does all the Olympic events.
Okay.
And I've known John since the British Triathlon days. And it was interesting thinking back to the BTA days, how it was organized. And it was everybody was just volunteers, obviously. I mean, I was the only one who was getting paid as an administrator because I was putting a lot of hours in for it. And we went across to Finland one summer to set up the World Triathlon Association, which didn't last very long. It became the World Triathlon something else. I can't remember. What's the governing body called now? It's just World Triathlon or something, isn't it?
World Triathlon Organization.
Yeah, WTO, yeah. Changed hands. And
It
just
didn't
going
not,
to different.
it didn't exist at all then. There was no
No,
world.
no, no. We had a sort of, there was a European collective, if you like, and it was just basically the event organizers in Europe who got together. And then we got together with, it was Valerie Silk who started the Ironman in Hawaii. She came across, and we had a meeting in Holland, in Amsterdam, to try and set up this for the first World Triathlon body and try and get some kind of rules and regulations that could be applied globally. Because there's an awful lot of difference, whether you could wear a wetsuit, whether you couldn't, whether it could be a short wetsuit or a long wetsuit, drafting rules, all the kind of usual things about transition and everything else that you could do, and prize money. It was in the days before, if you remember way back in the athletics, couldn't be professionals if they were getting prize money. And it was that kind of debate going on about making the sport professional, and allowing people who were putting, making it their profession to be professional athletes to get paid properly and proper prize money and stuff like that. So it developed a long way back, starting in the 80s then. Those late 80s, early 90s, the sport really grew and became professional. And I remember we did a race in Southport when Mark Allen came along, who was one of the gods at the time, one of the big four. And he was a very good speaker as well. He was very sort of motivational. And he just said, this is a transitional time for triathlon. We're sort of heading towards being an Olympic sport. And we really had to get our act together and show the world what the sport was about and how accessible it was to people. And it wasn't just for elite superstars. And that's one of the great joys about triathlon. It's, you don't have to be brilliant at it, and you can compete alongside the best people in the world, and be part of it and get motivated. Because you might not be the fastest swimmer, but you could be great on a bike, or you might be a wonderful runner, and you can get off the bike, and if you can get off the bike and run, then great.
And
Which is.
that's it for age groupers to there's not really any other sport that I can think of that you can actually go and do your race at the World Championship finals
Yeah.
on the same course as the pros are going to do maybe the next day.
Yeah.
The next day, watch them do exactly the same race that you've just done.
Yeah.
It, I can't really think of anything else that.
No, I mean, I suppose you could argue that people play golf with with the handicap system. I'm not a golfer, so I wouldn't know exactly, but
I guess.
it's to race alongside the fast guys. And I know there's races I've done where I've been milling around in the water waiting for the swim start and chatting to some of the fast guys, and suddenly realizing I'm in the wrong place, and you find yourself getting swum over by a
Oh,
thousand people. But I do like the fact that it's grown into this age group thing now, where you've got the elites and then the age groups. And the competitiveness in that, but the friendliness as well. It's not, it is very friendly competition, and everybody's cheering each other on, which I think is a wonderful thing to happen.
I was saying too, I think my last guest or the guest before, it's like a big family, when
Yeah.
you're away and you're meeting people that you've known from, you don't see them all year, but then you go and meet up after you've qualified and,
Yeah.
it's really cool.
But yeah, that's in fact, I just got into parkrun a couple of years ago, and that's a great little one for just building speed up. Enjoy that.
It's fantastic park run to get it's saying about getting people involved in things. It's
Yeah.
just it's amazing.
I mean, I go down there, and we get about 150 on average down the local one, and there's one old lady of 90 comes every week. People push in buggies, people taking dogs with them, people with kids. And everybody's cheering each other on. There's, we have one guy who wins every week, and he's just about sort of 15-minute 5K. But there's people there taking an hour to run, but everybody's just enjoying it. It's great.
It doesn't matter, does it?
No, and it's just taking part. And there's people recovering from injury or recovering from illness, all sizes, all shapes, and they're all
Absolutely.
doing it.
It's fab. So just going back to your days as the general secretary of the BTA, as it was at the time, what how did that develop then? You were talking about you trying to get the world organization or the world triathlon together. How did it develop?
Well, as a nation, nationally, we were sort of split into, I think it was nine different regions, and every region had its own representative who came to the national body, if you like. So we'd meet two or three times a year, and then we were, like I say, in touch with the people who organised the races, the big races in Europe. And it tended to be all big races. There was very few short races, very few pool-based races. So it was all things like the Roth Ironman and races in Holland. There was a guy in particular in Holland who was very, very active. I can't remember his name now. And I think it was just a general collective where we'd been in touch with each other, saying, we need to get some sort of order to the whole game, and get the sport more regulated without losing the attractiveness of the sport. So I think we had various European meetings together, and that led to the world one, where we got the Australians and the Americans across, because at the time the Americans were dominating the sport. And then we had guys like Robin Brew and Glenn Cook and Sarah Springman and Sarah Coop. And Sarah Coop won, I think it was one year, she won the short course, the medium course, and the Ironman course in Europe, all in one year. She was an undisputed champion. And it just sort of grew from that, where we also got together and realized this was the future of the sport, that we had to do that. So that meeting in Finland I mentioned, and the meeting in Holland, and it just sort of grew from that. We had one Canadian guy, I can't remember his name now, who took over as chairman of the world body. And I think there was some sort of dispute that led to that world triathlon body breaking up and then the existing body taking over in its place.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of lost track for a couple of years, I think, at one point. You know, family commitments and stuff like that. But yeah, it's just the way it's grown. And it used to be back then, the only people doing triathlons were people who were seen by the outside world as complete nutters. Yeah, why does anybody want to do three sports when one's enough?
Yeah, I still think that applies sometimes. You know, I know it's more common now, but people still, you know, they still don't comprehend it. You know, the average person doesn't comprehend what you do.
I've run about half a dozen marathons, and I'd much rather do an Olympic distance triathlon than do a marathon.
Yeah, and training.
And the training, and the knees.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, totally. So how long were you the general secretary for that then?
So we're doing that for about 2 and a bit years, I think it was. And then I was, like I say, doing the newsletter every month.
Yeah.
Which was keeping me in touch. I was getting contributions from race results and training ideas from other people, putting that into a newsletter, which was obviously handed, printed out by hand and stuffing envelopes and sending it out to people in the days before the internet and emails. And then that led to me building a relationship with a guy called John Lilly in Swindon. And the two of us got together and sort of mapped out 220 magazine. And I felt there was a conflict of interest being general secretary of the BTA and running a magazine. So I left the BTA and we concentrated on setting up 220, which started off in April 89, something like that.
Right.
I don't know if you can see this. That's the original first edition. Right.
Yeah, that's fab.
There's nothing. All the horoscopes are the same when they're on the horoscope page. They're all the same. You don't realize until you read it.
Yeah,
but I was writing the articles and taking the pictures for it. And in the days when we had a thing called desktop publishing, I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, vaguely.
Vaguely. So, and age where we could get a national distributor to put the magazine out there. We were just taking it around news agents and sports shops and running shops to say, you know, will you take half a dozen copies on sale or return?
Yeah,
and just getting it out that way.
Wow.
And it very quickly picked up.
Yeah, a lot of legwork then to start off with.
Yes, yeah, because I mean, like I say, there was no electronic media in that stage. I mean, even just sending one photograph by phone, it was the old ASDN line, which would take, you know, half an hour for one picture to load up. Can't imagine that, can you?
It's mind blowing now, isn't it, when you think about it?
Yeah, it'd be so much easier to produce it now.
Yeah.
So how, it's very interesting. I was just going to say, just as a quick aside, I was at an event this morning and I bumped into Dean Jackson from Hoob.
Okay. Oh, yes, yeah.
And I thought, you know, if there's anybody more influential in triathlon at the moment, it's him.
Yeah.
Because he's a local guy. And we got on like a house on fire, and he's just such a mind of information. We knew so many people in common. And he remembers that magazine. He's still got a copy of it himself.
Wow.
and he's, you know, if anybody's as influential in the sport as he is, because he's, you know, he's sponsoring races, sponsoring all the top athletes and stuff like that, and he's done a hell of a lot for the sport.
Yeah, I only really found out about Hoob. Well, I knew Hoob existed obviously because they're massive in wetsuits and things, but I only really found out that he was like one British, and he was in your neck of the woods. I had no idea. I always thought they were German for some reason. I never really looked into it, and I just thought, oh, they're a foreign company. And then it came. Have you heard of Reap Bikes, which are your neck of the woods? Reap.
Rib.
Reap, R-E-A-P, Reap.
Reap, no.
No, heard of them. They're a British manufacturer. They're the only manufacturer of carbon frames in the country.
Right.
And the CEO of Reap Bikes and the CEO of Hoob did a podcast together, the friends. And
right.
They're from your neck of the woods. And that's how I found out that's where they were from.
Right.
But it's fascinating story.
Well, Dean says, he says, oh, I've got to get you on the podcast. And I said, I was going to Dubrovnik. He said, have you got a wetsuit? And I said, no. He said, oh, I'll give you a wetsuit. I thought, wow, my lucky day.
he had the guy from Reed Bikes on his podcast. Right. And that's how I found out about
about Dean himself, really.
Right, because I know the word Hoob is a French guy, and he was the original designer of the suits. I can't remember his first name, but his second name was Hoob, and that's where the name comes from.
Well, look up Reap Bikes,
I
because
will.
fascinating story.
REAP.
REAP, yeah.
Will.
And he's the guy who develops it. He's a carbon manufacturer, and he does carbon for all sorts, Formula One and everything. But he's a triathlete
All
himself.
right.
And he sort of like sidelined now. He's gone into making manufacturing bikes.
Right.
So yeah, really cool bikes as well. So
I'll look him up.
yeah,
Definitely.
really good. How did the 2020 magazine progress?
Well, obviously, it's still going now. We ran it for a couple of years, and it got bought out by a company. I think it was Origin or Future or somebody, like one of the big publishing companies. And I mean, as 220, we sponsored a couple of races. We sponsored, I think it was the sort of Grand Prix series for 1 year. And it kind of grew, and it just became the magazine for the sport. Because there was a magazine, it was an American magazine called Triathlete. And I came up with the name 220 one day coming back from a BTA meeting, and it was about four of us in the car, brainstorming names. And as you know, 220 is the sort of theoretical maximum beat of a heart, human heartbeat, and you take your age off 220 to get your maximum. And that's where the name came from.
Clever.
So, and everybody used to say, "Why have we called it 220? Is it, is it how long it takes you to do a race, or is it the circumference of a wheel, or what?" But that's the reason. So it's because it was, we're dealing with a sort of maximum heartbeat type sport, then that's where it came from. But it
Brilliant.
grew and grew, and once we got national distribution, it really took off. Because of course, any magazine now, you need the well back then you need advertising, and in the days before the web, that was the only way you could make it pay. So it got you got to get the circulation before you can get the advertising, and it grew from that. And it was John Lilly who was running it and sort of funding it for in Swindon. So I was going up and down from Northumberland to Swindon on a sort of monthly basis. And it was much more of a thing to produce in those days. It was very hands-on and very messy with printing ink and all that kind of stuff, going to printers and surveying proofs and all that kind of stuff. It was a, I mean, compared to modern day, I mean, it's books now, you can write a book and have it put the finished article 2 days later. Whereas there with magazines, you had to get all sorts of reverse negatives and all sorts of stuff.
It got sold out, and then what happened? What happened? Did you carry on working for them, or?
No, I got into organizing events. I was organizing events at the time, but I got more into business events, and I was starting to do conferences and exhibitions and stuff. So I kind of moved away from triathlon while still being involved and keeping an eye on it. But the magazine went, and it's based, I think it's still based in Bristol, and they're still very active. I don't know what the turnover is now, but it's still a very active magazine. And of course, very active on social media and on the website as well.
I mean, it's when you start triathlon, I know my experience is one of the first things you go and have a look at that magazine, and you'd get it for maybe a year or so, and then things click into place, and you don't need that support anymore. But it is another, or especially it was back then, and now obviously we've got more internet stuff, more stuff on YouTube, like the
GTN.
GTN, yeah, that side of it, which is phenomenal as well.
Oh yeah, it's a great resource.
It's a great tool, yeah, it is.
Thinking of turbo trains, did you ever have a go in rollers?
Oh yeah, because I used to cycle when I was a kid. I was in a
Oh, so you'd
cycle,
know all
so
about rollers.
before even turbo trainers came
Yeah,
out,
yeah.
it was rollers. That's all you had.
I
I had a set of rollers in my shed.
remember the first set of rollers I got, and I was thinking, they must be faulty. I can't get this working at all. And eventually, when you get it working, it's a real, you're real knife edge stuff of.
And
I
then,
see you see videos of people doing it, cycling on those, the hands off the bars, just dead steady. It's a
well,
great way of learning how to ride steady.
it is. I mean, it's like everything, isn't it? It's just practice and practice. You got to put the time on to be any good at it, aren't you, really?
Absolutely, yeah.
So you went and did events. What happened next then? What was the next?
I think I just carried on just doing events at different parts of that. I went, did a race in Alat, did a race in Lanzarote, did, you know, the usual sort of La Santa thing. Just races around the country.
Yeah.
And then since, I don't know, I must have had about 10 years where I didn't do any races at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of got back into it, just did the odd one or two here and there.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just kept my, you know, I've kept fit and I've kept my interest going.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when it got into the Olympics, the first one was Sydney Olympics in 2000. And it was just sort of made my day to see it there, and always brought me to tears to see it. In fact, when Alex Yee won in Paris this year, I was definitely in tears then. I was just whooping with joy just to see how brilliant it was, and the coverage was fantastic.
Yeah. It's grown massively, hasn't it? It's just absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely yeah. huge. And I think the nice thing, especially, and I've said this before, especially for the pro athletes now, they can actually make a proper living out of it, you know.
Oh, God, yeah.
You've got all the different series. You've got the Super Tri series, which I think kickstarted them being able to afford to be pros, to be fair,
yeah.
and actually making a decent living.
Yeah.
And then now you've got the T100, which have then made Ironman, you know, up their game, haven't they, really?
Absolutely.
It's really good for them, I think.
Yeah. In fact, when I was talking to Dean this morning, he was just saying how a lot of these athletes now, they've all got managers and agents and stuff like that, and they're becoming like, you know, celebrities.
Yeah.
And they're almost quite hard to get a hold of because they're protected by those agents.
Yeah.
But they are making some serious money. The prize money is good, and their, you know, appearance money is good, and their travel cost and everything else.
Yeah. Because I remember even 2 years ago, I was listening to one of the podcasts and they had one of the British lads on there, and he said that he couldn't afford to go to Ironman because it cost him too much money. If you're not, obviously, you only get prize money down to a certain certain position. And
yeah.
He said he just couldn't afford to do it.
Well, can you imagine the cost of going to Hawaii and the accommodation and entry fees? Because the entry fees, it's huge.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what he was saying. He said he's out of pocket. He said it's just not doing.
But
it's nice to see that starting to come around, and they're actually getting what they deserve, in my opinion.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, when you look at Alistair and Johnny, their sponsorship and their coverage, they're almost like household names now.
Yeah, yeah.
And Alex Yee getting nominated to Sports Personality of the Year and things like that, it does raise the game and raise people's awareness.
Yeah.
And I even got my wife to do a little mini triathlon a couple of years ago, and she'd never claimed to be an athlete. She had to do the swim breaststroke, but she did it, you know. And she can claim in a sort that she's done a triathlon now. So
cool. It's I mean, that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's, you know, it doesn't matter at what level you do it at. I know we talk about age group on this podcast. But everybody starts exactly the same. And a lot of them say, oh, well, I couldn't swim when I started, so I used to do breaststroke. And then, you know, slowly but surely, I managed to do a few lengths of front crawl. And then I got into the next faster lane. And they just progress and progress and progress.
Yeah.
And they get to the age group scene. They manage to qualify. And then it's just like a bug, I suppose, after that. You know, once they've done it once and experienced that level, it's, you know, they just want to keep going back and back.
Well, it's that, and I think it's the sense of accomplishment that you get, and it's a sort of great boost to your self-confidence, especially as you're getting older and you see people, your contemporaries at the same age who aren't athletes, struggling with medication and injuries and stuff, and you almost don't dare say how well you feel and how fit you are and how injury-free or medication-free you are.
Yeah.
Because you've decided that you want to do this, and this is your lifestyle.
That's it, exactly. And that's exactly what I say every pretty much episode, that this is a lifestyle that we do. And I remember having a lady on a few weeks back, and she's in the 75 to 79 age group, and she's world champion in her age group. And I said to her, how do your friends who don't do this view you? You know what I mean? Because it must be, at that age, it must be like, they must be awestruck to see what she's accomplished and what she still does. And they're just there being normal old people, I suppose. Like just, you know what I mean? That must blow the mind.
It does. I mean, we, you know, if we go out with friends who are the same sort of age, and their entire conversation seems to be around what injuries they've got, what illness they've got, what medication they're on. And I just think, well, you know, you've chosen that. That's your, you know.
It is. It's a choice. You're right. Yeah. It absolutely is a choice.
You know, I've been doing it for 40 odd years. I mean, I started running as well as 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And you get into, it's just a mindset thing that's, you know, I know if I don't go for a run for a few days, I get really grumpy. You're yeah. probably the same.
Yeah, 100%. If I can't, do, I mean, I've been injured all this year, running wise, but I've been able to swim and bike. So not too bad, but I really get grumpy if I can't run.
Oh yeah.
Because I love running. But yeah, so I can imagine if I was only a runner and I couldn't run, it would be a nightmare.
Oh God, yeah. Actually, it's interesting. The last year, I've just joined the local running club, which I always used to run on my own. Right. And I'm lucky where I live. I'm surrounded by little country lanes and things.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's opened up a whole new side to running with the running club.
Hmm.
And we go out Tuesday nights or Thursday nights. And it's got me into the running, on, you know, doing 10Ks on Sundays or whatever. And I came third in the club championships.
Well done.
You had to do 6 races and you qualified for the club championships. And I came third. Couldn't believe it. Those guys much faster, but they hadn't done the required 6 races.
Yeah. No, but, it's all those little things, isn't it?
That kids
faded, and especially in a club. And
yeah.
I found when I started and then joined the athletics club, like you, we were in the tri club, and I joined the athletics club because they had more running sessions. It just brings you on so much.
Absolutely. They're really great encouragement, and just doing little races like that. I'd never done 10Ks before, and you realize just to get under 50 minutes is great. I've got that, and you think I can knock another 10 seconds off if I do this or whatever.
Yeah.
And you realize that whole age group thing, because you don't look at the winners, you just look at the guys in your age group, and you know you all know each other, and there's a little bit of needle, but it's all friendly stuff.
Yeah, and the other thing is, it's great, isn't it, when you know you've started doing that, and you're seeing that you can actually, even though we're getting older, we can still get a little bit faster, or you know, make some gains somewhere. You know, which is just so motivational, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I did my fastest 10K this year.
Yeah.
You know, at the age of 68, I thought, well, that's not bad going. You know,
no, it's great.
Pleased with myself.
Yeah, and long may it continue.
Yeah, it was good. It's good.
You said you haven't done any age group. Have you got any plans to do any age group?
I mean, I don't know whether I'd want to do that. I mean, I don't even know if I would qualify.
Yeah.
But I enjoy the age group thing. But I mean, if I could, then I'd definitely be chasing that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many races I'd have to do, because I feel back in the 80s and 90s, I was doing lots of races, and I think that was my kind of a peak then. And now I'm just doing it for fun.
Yeah. I think it depends on what distance that you were looking to do. So the sprint and the Olympic distance, they're 3 set races that you got each chance to qualify. So the top 4 of each of those races has an automatic qualification. And then it's the fastest. It's done on a percentage basis.
Right.
So there's 12 automatic qualifiers, and then the rest of 20 places altogether in both the Europeans and the Worlds at each age group.
Right.
And then the other 8 get a roll down place. So it's the fastest of the other 8, really.
And that's fastest overall time.
Say if you did a race, one of the qualifiers, and you didn't come in the top 4, it would be your time versus the winner of that race as a percentage. And you've got to get below 120% of the winner of the race. So they take that percentage, and whoever's the fastest of the 8 of the 3 races, so whoever's got the best percentage, so 105% is a really good percentage.
150%,
you're still in. But you've probably got less of a chance of qualifying, if that.
All right.
It's quite technical and quite tactical.
Where can you find more details out about it?
If you go on the British Triathlon website,
right,
and it's all explained on there.
Okay, I'll have a look at that.
So that's for the standard Olympic and the sprint.
Right.
If you're going to go middle distance and long distance, you would just rock up to a middle or a long distance race. And then you could put your time in. to. So there's no formal races for those distances, if that makes sense.
Right.
Just get your time and see how it's stacked up against, I don't know, the other people that have submitted the times.
Because I know when I did 220, we set up a national ranking system,
Yeah.
which it was basically the same sort of thing. And as long as the race was won by somebody who's in the national team,
Yeah.
that became the sort of benchmark, and then you graded yourself after that. And
Yeah.
that worked really well. People were sort of, watching their rankings go up or down throughout the season. And it's obviously it's the same sort of principle for the age groups.
Yeah, similarly, yeah.
Yeah.
There is a guy who's just done a ranking system. It's called My Try Ranking. So you can
Right.
actually go and do these age group races, and then automatically it'll give you a ranking of where
All
you
right.
are. David Pearson, the guy's called. He also does age group news, which is like a newsletter online for all of the age groupers that
Right.
have qualified and all the age group races. It's really, really good resource.
All right. I'll look into that.
Yeah, so he's set those two things up, and he's also a team manager actually as well. So he's really well involved in it all.
Do you know him? Are you in
Yeah, he's
touch
been
with
on the
him?
podcast a couple of times. Yeah,
Right.
yeah.
Oh, good.
So he's a really nice guy.
I'll have to
And he
look him
races
up.
him. And he races himself as well, so
Right.
yeah. So there's lots of things out there that help to get you to where you want to be, I suppose, if you need to. But I would say that the British Triathlon website is the best resource to find out about qualifying. Well, that's a really fantastic story that you've told us. I mean, I've never had anybody that was pretty much there at the beginning when it was all kicking off in that capacity that you have. So that's fascinating for one thing. The other thing I'd like to bring up is that you're an actual author now. So I really would like you to plug your books, because I definitely am going to get one of your books and give it a read, because it's, like I said to you before we started, it's right up my street, crime.
Well, that second one is just the first one took me years to get going. It was just a hobby, and since I retired, I've been concentrating more on the second book. And again, things get in the way, and I made a decision. Right, I was going to publish it on the 17th of December this year, so I sat down sometime in October and wrote about 70,000 words, and got it all finished, and got it up there. Because if you don't get it up online to Amazon, they ban you for a year. So I had to get it done.
Did you self-publish?
Yes,
Oh,
yes.
brilliant.
So it's on KDP. If you're a Kindle reader, you can get it on an ebook, and you can get it as a paperback as well.
So let everybody know what the book
So
is.
it's
Books are.
my protagonist in the book is Susie Jones, who's an ex Royal Military Police officer, but she's also a very keen triathlete, obviously, had to be. And she now works as an investigative journalist. So the first book she was chasing down some illegitimate email medication, weight loss medication.
Right.
And then the second book, it's all to do based around Christmas time, when the whole payment processing system collapses and nobody can buy anything for cash, for with their cards. They've got to use cash, and nobody's got cash anymore. So she's going into that. So it's a good yarn. I've heard a few people read it and they say it's you can't put it down once you start.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to getting those and read them. I'm just reading Michael Connolly. I don't know whether you've heard of his.
Yeah, I know
He,
Michael.
he's got a female protagonist as well called Ballard, and
Yes.
I've read most of his other novels, because he written about with the Lincoln Lawyer and
And
also
Bosch.
Bosch.
And
Yeah,
Bosch and Lincoln
and
Lawyer, yeah.
he's a really great crime writer. I really
He
like that.
is.
And Ballard's is his latest one, and
Yeah.
she's a surfer.
All right.
So it's yeah, right up my street. So yeah,
No. But
I'll
this
put a link in the show notes as well about from your Amazon account.
Right, I think just link straight through to that. So
Yeah.
I'm in, like Michael Connelly, how he's got the Lincoln Lawyer on Amazon and Bosch on Netflix, or the other way around.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, you can sell books all day long, but you're not going to make much money. You make money by getting a Netflix deal
Yeah.
or an Amazon Prime deal. So that's my goal for the next year.
Yeah.
And
Oh,
I'm
well,
getting on with book three as well. So
So did you find book two, because you already had the character in a book, did you find the second one easier to like carry on with?
Yes, the mistake I made was to start writing it before I'd got it fully plotted out in my mind, because I like to plot these things through right to the end. And when I've sat down to start writing book three, I'm going to get the whole thing plotted out in full, and then start writing it. Because once I start writing it, I know I can do the whole thing in about 2 months, rather than leaving it and coming back to it and thinking, now what did I write last week or whatever. And I really get in once I start writing it. I find it really it just comes very easily.
Just flows.
Yeah, it's very absorbing, and I like to have a purpose, because I mean, you know, it's like if you've since there must be a lot of people who retire who haven't got a purpose, and they just sit and put weight on and eat the wrong food and don't do any exercise. So I'm
100%.
trying to fit in writing and running and cycling and swimming all together.
Well, it's a balance, isn't it?
Yeah, it just gets me out and gets the fresh air, and then keeps my brain active as well.
Well, it's fabulous. And like I said, I'm going to get the books and I'm hopefully give you some feedback.
Great, Rich. I'll look forward to hearing from you.
Cool. Right, so we'll just move on to the quick fire questions. And first one is, what's your favorite bit of kit?
My bike.
Yeah, that's a common answer.
It's a 40-year-old rally bike.
Right,
And
okay.
it was 731 tubing, which I got 40 years ago, and I had it resprayed by Mercian Cycles in Derby last February, and it looks fantastic now. And the last race I did, there was some of the winning guys who were coming past me on the bike saying, "Oh, I love your bike." And it's proper old school with the old Scott DH bars on. And it looks $1 million. It's great. It's not like one of these whizzy carbon fiber jobs, but it's great. I love it.
Cool. And what resources do you use to help you train? You said you've got your turbo and you've joined the athletics club. What else do you use to help you train?
In the brain, it's all mental, isn't it? It's you know, making yourself get out there and do it, and not go and do too much and knacker yourself. And
Do you
especially
have
as you get as you get older, you've got to be, I think, give yourself more time to recover, and just listen to your body more. And I think a lot of younger athletes are very, it's very easy to overtrain and get injured. And I think you learn from your mistakes.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm still getting injured. I haven't
I
learned yet.
spent a year off with plantar fasciitis in my foot, and that seems to be a very common problem with people.
I think so.
Yeah.
That and calf strains and Achilles
Yeah.
issues and it's all the running, isn't it? The biking and the swimming's not so much of a problem, is it? It's just the running that's the where the injuries
Yes.
usually come up. But
I blame the swimming for the hair loss.
well, snap. And
Yeah.
then finally, what are your short and your longer term goals then?
I suppose I want to break 24 minutes for a 5K. I want to break 50 minutes for a 10K. And yeah, I'd like genuinely like to qualify in my age group for either the European or the world, definitely. I think that would
Brilliant.
be a really good, you know, because it keeps you going. It keeps you. You just think, I'm not going to retire. I mean, why should you pack in just because you're a certain age? So,
I mean, you look like you rightly said, I mean, it goes right up beyond 80s. And
yeah.
some of the guys there are just they're just phenomenal and they're inspiring, really.
Yeah.
They're inspiring to us all to
Yeah.
carry on and do the training and turn up to the races and qualify and get themselves out there and all right,
Yeah.
there's not that many in as they get older, there isn't that many in their age group, but it makes no difference, does it?
Yeah.
Like we said earlier, they've actually put themselves in that position and are
Yeah.
capable of doing it. And it's just,
They've made that choice. As some wise old person said, that age is just a number.
100%.
So,
Well,
yeah.
if we can help in any way of you getting to qualify, whether it's any questions you've got to ask or please do get in touch and we'll help as much as we can.
I appreciate that, Rich. And I mean, if you can send me that details for Mick that I asked you to write, that'd be great.
Definitely will. I'll message him and I'll make sure it's okay for me to give you his email.
And I'll have a word with my friend Dan Harding and see if he'd like to come on your
Yeah,
podcast.
please do. And if there's any others that you know, I'm always looking for guests. Always looking
Right.
for guests because obviously I can't do this podcast without them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, please do that. And if you could just spread the word to your community that we exist, that's
Will
also
do. I'll be happy to do that.
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you ever so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure to meet you.
Super. All the best, Leah.
Nice to meet you. Take care.
And you. Bye for now.
Cheers. Bye bye.
So thanks very much, Duncan, for coming on the podcast. Really great insight there into how triathlon evolved back nearly 40 years ago, like you said, and your involvement in it. Amazing to see all the things that you've done, from being the general secretary of the BTA as it was then, and then going on to do Try 20 magazine. Absolutely phenomenal. Great insight. Thank you very much for coming on the pod. And please do look out for Duncan's novels. If you're into this sort of thing, like I said, I am, and I will be giving them a read. So the first one was Sharp Focus, and the second one is Four Meals from Anarchy. And the protagonist is an investigative journalist called Susie Jones. And she's also a triathlete, so there you go. I shall put the link in the show notes, but you can find them on Duncan's own website, which is duncanrobauthor.com, or if you just go over to Amazon, you can find them on there. So that's about it for this episode. Thank you for taking your time out, giving us a listen. Please do spread the word, share our pod to like-minded people, and if you know anybody or yourself would like to come on and be a guest on the pod, please do just get in touch. You can get in touch via our email at agegroupmultisportpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at amp_1967, Facebook at ampgb, and we are on X at Age Group Multisport Podcast, and our YouTube channel, where you can find all these podcasts and all the silly videos that are put up, is AmpGB. So have a great fortnight, and we'll see you when we get back with the next episode. Don't forget, stay safe, keep training, and love the process.